overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
So good morning, and welcome to our Sunday celebration in virtual land. Thank all of you for tuning in. And let's do a meditation to establish ourselves in that field of receptivity. I hear the Buddha who says we don't learn from experience, but we learn from our capacity to experience. And so we do this opening meditation to expand our capacity to receive from the universe. I know, as Jesus did, that I myself do nothing. It's this presence, this love, this power within that does the work. And so this Sunday we're going to be talking about the work of love, knowing that love is what the universe is made out of. It's love that keeps us together, as the song says. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Those are not just cliche words, but they're deep abiding truths. In fact, Jesus' last words on this planet, it's all hearsay, but hearsay was that he said, just love one another as I've loved you. And so as we inquire into this vibrational field called love, we hear the phones are ringing for us.
Sorry.
And that's the universe with a sense of humor, saying, turn off your phone, my beloved.
It's off.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I was leading a deep meditation in California, and maybe 500 people in the audience, and we asked them to silence their phones. And at the deepest place in the meditation, a bunch of monkeys started laughing on the phone. And what are you going to do? You laugh at the monkeys, and then you return to the still point. And maybe that's emblematic of life itself. You know, we're going through life on cruise control, and then something happens, and we have to be more vigilant in how we navigate. And these are times where we have to be vigilant, we have to wear masks. And that's a good thing. That's a precautionary thing. I've never washed my hands so often as I am now. And I love this idea of safe distancing, because there's kind of a respect that we're holding for another human being. And so when you see your neighbor across the street, you can still have that conversation, but you're just not right next to each other. And so this new way of thinking, this new way of being in the world, we could call it stressful or we could call it empowering. You know, it's all how we describe the life that we're living. Yes, there's going to be difficulties, but could we see those difficulties as really opportunities? I was with a Qigong master yesterday doing a meditation retreat with Lisa Ferraro on Zoom. And I asked this Qigong master who works with the Qi, and it's all about this life force, this Qi, finding harmony within our bodies, within our minds, within our soul. And I asked her about this challenge I'm having with my spine, and she invited me to see the wholeness of the spine, not to identify with the pain or the challenge. And in the simplicity of her response, I said, of course. So I have hope that our planet is going to be restored to sanity, that we're going to be embracing kindness in the White House, where all are welcome, all colors, all nationalities, all forms of immigrants. I happen to be a child of an immigrant. My mother, my grandmother was from Norway. She came over on the boat. And I think my grandfather was a crazy Norwegian seaman. And on my father's side, they were all from Ireland and England and Wales. And they weren't the wealthy ones. They were the ones that were looking for hope in a new country. And so we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors, and here we are today, celebrating the freedom to worship the way we choose to worship. That's one of the things I love about this country, are the freedoms that we have. The freedom to choose a spirituality that feels right for us and not be dictated by some kind of authoritarian ruler. Even though it's fairly new for me to have my freedom as a gay man, yesterday was my third wedding anniversary after only 45 years of being with this man. Thank you, Supreme Court, for finally giving us a right that everybody else had. And so there's an overwhelming sense of gratitude for this shift in consciousness that we're all a part of. I know the world can only change when each one of us changes. And so we come here to the center to open our hearts and open our minds to this capacity to be this fashioning factor in the world where we bring the peace, where we bring the hope, where we bring the kindness, where we bring the enthusiasm. This is how we create a world that works for everyone, not just a select few. And as we embrace the allness of our interconnectedness, be it human or animal or planetary, we realize that it must be a win-win. A win for the environment and a win for humanity. A win for nature and a win for business. When we're all working together in harmony and love with respect and honor, this is the kind of world where people smile at one another and embrace one another and hold one another in a holding space of deep acceptance and love. And so it starts right here with us. I invite you to anchor yourself in the breath. Something as simple and as benign as the breath, it's always there. Even when we're anxious, even when we're struggling, we can just stop long enough to take a conscious breath. And then as Hildegard of Bingen said, give a sigh for the divine. And in that sigh, there's an ultimate release. There's a letting go and a letting be. And so the breath becomes our ally, becomes our friend. We allow the mind to be quiet because the mind loves to chatter away, loves to give us thoughts to think, concerns to fret about. But for this brief period together, we're going to turn off the nattering nabobs of negativity that operate within this overly zealous mind of ours. And we're going to return to the peace, to the stillness, to this beautiful open-hearted awareness that we've been cultivating all month. An open-hearted awareness that accepts what is doesn't mean that we don't move into action. But in accepting what is, then we can strategize what would be the best action. And then without attachment to outcome, we move forward in service to some greater vision that is awakening within our hearts and our souls. I invite you to allow yourself to be done this Sunday. By the very presence that is within us and all around us. Let the love have its way with you. If you only knew how much you were loved. So open to this love. And we'll explore it together. Put your hands over your heart, feel that connection. The spiritual heart is on the right side, metaphorically. So you have the left and the right coming together at the center with your hands touching. Open your eyes. And it's so nice to look into the eyes. They say the eyes are the window to the soul. And you know, I never looked into my eyes for years because I was wearing glasses since that time I was 3 years old. And because of the miracle of surgery and putting in a lens after a cataract surgery, first they removed the cataract, which was this cloud you're looking through. That's enough in itself. And then they insert this little tubular thing, I was told. And they put it in there, and then that little tubular thing opens up, and that's a new lens. And so you can read an eye chart. I'd never been able to read an eye chart before in my whole life. And I found when Dr. Mitchell gave me this ability to see, I was so overwhelmed that I threw my arms around it. I couldn't do that in COVID world now. But he thought I was crazy. I said, I only save people's souls, but you bring back the from the blind to the seeing. I said, that is truly a miracle. So I believe in science, knowing what science can do. And isn't it great to have this time in life when we get to live consciously? You know, we call ourselves the Center for Spiritual Living, but maybe 25 years ago, I picked a name up for the center that I thought was the really appropriate name, and we changed it because the organization went through an evolution. But we used to call ourselves the Center for Conscious Living because it's about living consciously, about taking responsibility for the consciousness that you're bringing to the world. You know, are we bringing a positive energy to the world? Are we bringing hope and possibility? I was so heartened in listening to the speakers this week at the Democratic Convention because they spoke my language. They spoke a language of hope and possibility and how we can do this together. You know, we can all come together and love one another. You know, even in a time of a pandemic and race riots, and there's crisis happening all over the planet, could we nurture each other and nurture the planet? I've been watching a lot of BBC America, and they talk about the warming of the planet and the fires in California. That's where I used to live, in Northern California. You know, my heart goes out, not just to the people and the hardship they're going through, but all the animals that are being affected by this. So what if it's not about turning a blind eye to the suffering of the planet, but by opening our hearts and asking how can we serve in a more loving way and to bring this power that we all are into action through our hearts. John Lewis was kind of one of my heroes, and he would say, when you see something that you don't agree with, something that appears to be wrong, he said that you're complicit if you don't say anything. But if you do say something, you know, I can think of the one thing that I'm involved with my crazy, wonderful husband who wants to save the trees in Huntsville. And he's, what do they call it? He and his buddy, Jerry Berg, made these signs up. There's over 80 of them now in the city. And they're going around and it says, if you like the shade, thank a tree. We need more of them, not less of them. And so he feels his little fight to save the trees is going somewhere. And it may seem small, but I think it's a beautiful testament to our way of wanting to work together with the environment. One tree at a time, one plant at a time, one heart at a time. Karen Drecker wrote a beautiful song that says, we can change the world one heart at a time. So what if that heart is your heart and it's my heart and it starts right here with us, you know, about caring enough. The other thing that I can say that my beloved husband does is he cares about the four-leggeds. And so we're going to be going out of town tomorrow for a little short vacation up to Mentone. And Gigi and Raul are going to look after our koi and our little yard. But I said, Raul, there's a special job I have for you. And that's to fill the water bowls up for the dogs. Literally, people from all over come walking down that sidewalk. And they congregate around those water bowls. And it is so cute. And Trey will not put a dirty water bowl out. He says it has to be clean. So every day he puts fresh water out for the animals. And it gives him so much joy just to be in service. And you know, that whole thing started when Trey and I went on a pilgrimage to Istanbul with the Sufis. Gigi was on that trip with us. And Trey's reluctant to go on anything organized. But he agreed to go because he'd never been to Turkey. And he's traveling with the Sufis, which he wasn't crazy about. And they're supposed to be spiritual people. And Trey said, they're so damn spiritual, they don't care about the animals. Because everywhere we went, it was hot as blazes, and there was no water for anything. We were in Ephesus, which is this ancient ruin, and the cats were literally crawling down, so thirsty. And I remember taking a water bottle and putting the water in the cap and putting it, and the little cat came over and drank. And Trey said, these animals need water. So he left the Sufi group, and he's walking around watering the animals and putting them, and that made him feel good. And so each one of us gets to find our way to serve, as crazy as that may sound. This month I'm talking about living in the flow. Hey, come on in. Oh, yes, it's, how you doing? Good to see you. I didn't recognize you with your masks on. Marion and Pat, right?
Yes.
Well, welcome. This month I'm speaking on living in a flow. And it's a place that I've come to know. You might notice on Sundays I'm in a natural flow. I start off to do a treatment, the phone rings, and I go off in another direction. That's what flow is. You're willing to change on the drop of the hat when life throws you a curveball. And so living in the flow for me is knowing that I'm not the doer. There's something that's doing this life. And when I can be open to that life, that God's life, using us in its own magnificent way. We had a song that was by Ricky Byer. Mary will remember this. It's called Use Me. Use me, O God, I stand for you, and here I'll abide as you show me all that I must do. Now, that sounds dualistic, but it's not really, because part of us is in a receptive mode. We as human beings have to be receptive to the influx of spirit. That's something that we all access. Emerson called it his Orphic voice. You know, Ernest Holmes' very last work was called The Voice Celestial. And he and his brother, literally throughout this incredibly difficult book to read and even teach, they were finding that thread of truth from all the world's religions. And they were catching that thread from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Upanishads, from Hinduism, from Buddhism. It's all the same voice coming through, but you have to catch it. And so in order to do that, we have to be willing to listen and to be in a natural flow of receptivity. Flow of receptivity. I really tapped into this idea of that receptive flow from Emerson in his essay, The Oversoul, when he said, there is a river whose source is hidden, and from whence it comes, I know not. But when it comes, no, there is a stream whose source is hidden, and from whence it comes, I know not. But when it comes, he said, I am a pensioner. I draw from that stream of truth, that stream of awareness, that stream of, And so what if our responsibility, challenge, and opportunity in any unfolding moment is to tap into that, to be able to listen, to hear that? You know, they say that it was Eckhart Tolle that said, that still small voice of the universe has not stopped speaking. He said, but it gets clearer when we become still. So could we be clear and hear that? Now, the first week of this month, I spoke about a mind that's without fear. And in that talk, I shared with you that there is four aspects to mind, from according to Locke Kelly in his book, Shift into Freedom. He said the first aspect of mind is the local mind, and it's the local mind that has the fear. That's where it's about me and my situation and my worries and my concerns and my anxiety, and that's where all the fear arises, is in the me world. The second phase of mind, Locke Kelly speaks about, is the witness mind, and if you ever had a yoga class, you know what it is, to witness your body stretching, to witness your thoughts moving through your mind, if you've ever had a meditation class. And so the second aspect of mind is we witness the fear. Ah, fear is arising. And if you're someone like a saint, like Thich Nhat Hanh, you'll say, oh, there you are, my little fear. You don't have to make it bigger than it is. Yes, these are concerning times. I'm afraid to go in a room where nobody has masks on. So there you are, my little fear. And my little fear says, be smart, be tough, and be united. And I said, thank you, my little fear. So that doesn't mean fear goes away, but I'm witnessing fear. Now, the third aspect of mind, according to Locke Kelly, is that there is this awake awareness, this field of awareness that is beyond all thought. You can feel it right now. Focus on your right big toe and move it up and down. That big toe has awareness, doesn't it? It's not thinking a thought, is it? It's not giving you a narrative or a story, and yet it can move up and down, and it's fully conscious. Now, I bet your left big toe can do the same thing. Why, gosh, there's oneness in the toe world. You know, you begin to play. So what if this awareness is what we are? So one of my teachers, Ajahshakti, said, at this stage of my evolution, I can't afford to believe my thoughts. Because thoughts can run away with a stinky bowl just like a dog can. You know what I'm talking about, Anastasia. Those dogs can go after them. And it was so funny. You try to take the bone away from the dog and they'll growl at you. Trey had a big fight with the pug the other day because the pug found the chicken strip. Now, Bird eats the chicken strips and the pug is allergic to chicken. So the pug found the chicken strip on the floor and went running under the sofa with the chicken strip. And Trey's down there on his knees trying to get the chicken strip away from the pug. And the pug said, I'm not getting this chicken strip. If it kills me, I'm eating it. I said, let him eat the chicken strip. So that's the little mind that wants to fight. Whereas the wise, awake awareness chooses its battles carefully. But ultimately, Locke Kelly goes to this last phase of mind. And this is what they all speak about, the enlightened teachers that I study with, like Ram Dass. He said, we have to put the head and the heart together. And they call it open-hearted awareness. So there's a love element to this awareness. Huh? If you feed the birds, if you have a connection to butterflies and nature, there is an open-hearted awareness that's in service. We're all connected. And isn't that the goal of life, is to move through life with compassion? The most moving part of the whole Democratic Convention was when a 13-year-old boy who's been living his life stuttering was embraced by Vice President Joe Biden, who also suffered from stuttering. And he told the little boy, just like Gloria, she's learning to speak again by reading a book to her husband, he told him to sit with a book and to circle the words that he has difficulty with. And he said, he was helping me learn to speak again. And then the two of them embraced one another. Could we have a kinder, gentler nation, as George W. Papa Bush used to say? A kinder, gentler nation. So the second Sunday, I talked about the work of being. And the work of being is, what are we being? Are we being open? Are we being hopeful? You know, could we let our doing arise from our being? Are we being helpful? Are we being kind? Or are we being critical? Are we being judgmental? Are we being negative? Are we being angry? We get to choose our beingness. So the work of being is, who am I being in this moment? And that's a wonderful question to live by. Am I being the solution or am I being part of the problem? Am I being someone who lifts people up or am I being someone who labels them and condemns them? I remember it was Goethe who said, and anybody who has children knows this, Goethe said, if you see a child and you label them, you limit them. But if you see a child and you see their possibility and their potential, then you lift them into that. So what if we could be that optimistic, hopeful voice of encouragement to our children and to each other during these difficult times? The neighbor who cut all the trees down, who Trey confronted, who told then Trey to get a life, he's evicting the neighbor who lives in his house because she's struggling to pay the rent. And she went to him and she came to me and she was crying. She said, I asked him to help me out, to just work with me on this. She said, when I get back full time, I'll be able to pay the full rent. And he said, no, you're out of here. And I got so mad. Sharon and I went over there, we gave her $1,000. I said, let's help you. And she fell into my arms crying. And she said, it'll help me move, because he won't let her stay. So what if you do what you can? And that's the work of being. Last week I talked about it, the work of being human. And that's where the rubber hits the road. We can know that we're divine forever, but to know that we're human, that's where the challenges come in. Could we let our humanity and our divinity work together in a double thread? Walter Starkey wrote a beautiful book called The Double Thread, and he based it on a simple statement of Jesus's. And Jesus' phrase was to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And then to love your neighbor as yourself. And he said, it's both. And he prioritized it. First, love this divinity that we all are an aspect of. And then love your neighbor as an aspect of that divinity. They're not separate, they're you. You know, if you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. It's all you. And so could this work of being human let us embrace our own humanity, our own flaws, our own shadow? And at the end of the book, Locke Kelly talks about when those shadow aspects of ourself arise, and they will arise, we invite them in, like Rumi's guest house, and we sit them down. And Bravo did a beautiful song in his final project, and he addresses that in Locke Kelly's book. When those sub-personalities come, you ask them, what do they want? You know, controlling Curtis wants to have his life with some sense of control. But you know what they say about control? It's the illusion of control. So, yes, Curtis, I know you want to be in control, and this is as controlled as we can get. Pull out our mask and put it on, and that's your control mechanism right there. Thank Curtis says, thank you. I needed to know that I still have a place in your life. Yes, you do, Curtis. Fearful Freddy, yes, Fearful Freddy. He's going to come up at the craziest times. And once he's embraced and he's held, well, then he's not running the show sabotaging me, but rather he's your ally, he's your friend, and you can work with it. We all have these challenges in life. And when we can embrace it within ourselves, we can embrace it within each other. Our family is right now going through the challenge with Sister Susan, who has cancer of the tongue. And in speaking to the doctors and the nurses, they say this is one of the most painful cancers of all because she can't eat, she can't talk. And I see her shutting down. I see her isolating. And as well-meaning as we are way down here in Alabama, she's in upstate New York. And it's a challenge to navigate in this situation. So every day, phone call after phone call, how can we assist? How can we serve? You know, and then live in the I don't know place, you know, because we can't know. But we can try this and maybe try that and see how skillful we can be. So this week we're going to talk about the work of love. And Gloria G. Gave me this book. It's called The Ultimate Answer to the Meaning of Life, and the title of the book is Love. And there's maybe 50 to 100 essays from some of the leading people, from Robert Adams, from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, talking about the necessity of love. They, even the heart math people, talked about when you are being kind, smiling to someone or embracing someone, a drug literally is in your body. It's called oxytocin. I was at a spiritual retreat, and you know that the people in the kitchen were working so hard, and the people on the retreat were acting like they were wanted to be served from the kitchen. And so I would look around that dining room, and there were all these dirty plates and things shoved in the middle of the table waiting for the staff to come and help. So I found myself scooping up the plates and carrying them to the kitchen and scraping them off. And the kitchen help said, thank you, you don't need to do that. I said, you know what? I'm getting my oxytocin fix. And so the more I served and the more I hauled, the better I felt. Something as simple as doing a kind deed to another person. So I chose the one, and I was reading this yesterday, I was loving every bit of it, but the one that I found to be the most moving of all was Albert Einstein himself. You know, Albert Einstein was quite a mystic, and he would say things like, the level of consciousness that created the problem is not the level of consciousness that's required to create the solution. And so if we're still staying in this blame-oriented victim consciousness, we're not really lifting ourselves out into a greater awareness. And so he talks about in 1980, when he made his transition, it says that he gave 1,400 letters that he had written to his daughter, Liesl. And one of those letters is published in this book on love. And this is Einstein speaking, and I think he was a little remorseful for being considered the father of nuclear fusion, or whatever it is that he got labeled with. So this is what he said to his daughter, Liesl. I'm just going to give you a little bit of it. He said, love is power because it multiplies the best that we have and allows humanity not to be extinguished in their blind selfishness. He said, love unfolds within us and reveals itself. For love we live and for love we die. He said, love is God and God is love. This is a scientist talking about love. And then he says, if instead of E equals MC squared, which is the famous equation he was known for, we accept that the energy to heal the world can be obtained through love multiplied by the speed of light squared, then we arrive at the conclusion that love is the most powerful force there is in the universe because it has no limits. Now, this is coming from Einstein, folks. He said, after the failure of humanity in the use and control of other forces of the universe that have turned against us, he said, it is urgent that we nourish ourselves with another kind of energy. It's not time to blow each other up. It's time to heal with the quantum power of love. He's trying to make amends. It sounds to me like Anne-Marie here. He says, if we want our species to survive, if we are to find meaning in life, if we want to save the world and every sentient being that inhabits it, sentient beings are beings that have feelings. And I would venture to say that all beings have feelings. Even the winged ones, my little koi in the pond, you're going to find them when you go to Gigi. Every morning I go over them, they come up and they start making little faces at me. I call them the three amigos because they're such buds. He said, if we want to save the world and every sentient being that inhabits it, love is the one and only answer. He says, perhaps we're not yet ready to make a bomb of love. Ooh, he's using a metaphor. A device powerful enough to entirely destroy the hate and the selfishness and the greed that devastate our planet. Can you imagine a bomb that would destroy selfishness and hate and greed? He's preaching here. He says, however, this is a letter to his daughter. Each individual carries within them a small but powerful generator of love whose energy is waiting to be released. You know, in the essay of Robert Adams, I was going to do this one for Glory to you because he talks in his essay about finding that energy of love within you and letting it radiate out into the world. And he says, we have that power. We're each ones of us. There is no great or small in this life of God. He says, when we learn to give and receive this energy, my dearest daughter, Liesl, we will have affirmed that love conquers all and is able to transcend everything and anything because love is the quintessence of life. I'm loving reading this from a scientist. Huh. And then he apologizes. He says, I deeply regret not having been able to express to you, my beloved daughter, what is in my heart. So many of us can't. Which has quietly beaten for all of my life. Maybe it's too late to apologize, but as time is relative, huh? And you know time is relative. There is no time in eternal now. He says, I need to tell you that I love you and I want to thank you and that I have reached this ultimate answer that ours truly is the work of love. Albert Einstein, ours is the work of love. So what would that look like in your life? You know, how would that be? I find one of the most loving practices that I can do is what they call the loving kindness meditation from Buddhism. And it starts with yourself first. So put your hand on your heart and say, may I be filled with loving kindness.
May I be filled with loving kindness.
May I be well.
May I be well.
May I be peaceful and at ease.
May I be peaceful and at ease.
And may I be happy.
May I be happy.
Now see someone that you like, that you love, that you care about, and say to them, may you be filled with loving kindness.
May you be filled with loving kindness.
May you be well.
May you be well.
May you be peaceful and at ease.
May you be peaceful and at ease.
And may you be happy.
May you be happy.
And now let's expand this to the planet and to all those that are struggling and suffering. I watched this thing on the BBC about Lebanon, and how that huge explosion and how the people in Lebanon are just struggling to survive, to be fed. And so many people, my heart was so touched by so many people coming to feed them, to help them. So let's send this out to the world. May you be filled with loving kindness.
May you be filled with loving kindness.
May you be well.
May you be well.
May you be peaceful and at ease.
May you be peaceful and at ease.
And may you be happy.
And may you be happy.
There's a wonderful saying that says you won't be happy when you get what you want. You'll be happy when you want what you have. You know, I'm so grateful to be living in my beautiful home with my beloved husband of 3 years marriage. We're newlyweds. I'm just kidding. And this incredible community of like-minded souls that come here on Sundays with their masks on just to assist as we together send out a vibrational field. I wanted to, since I've been using this as my oracle for this whole series, Shift into Freedom, the very last page of the book, he talks about the work of love and what it would look like in the world. And it's nice to have an image. Einstein can talk about it, but what would it look like? And Locke Kelly has a beautiful way of synthesizing that into a simple paragraph. He says this, ultimately, my hope is that by beginning with small glimpses, to glimpse the love in the smallest of things, when Jean is helping birth her butterflies, when we're filling up the water bowls, glimpsing this love. He said, small glimpses, you will fall in love ultimately with love. Falling in love with love. I was in a musical called Boys from Syracuse, and my song was the song, falling in love with love is falling for make-believe. Falling in love with love is playing the fool. Now I realize those lyrics are stupid because we're here to fall in love with love. Love is what we are. And that's what he's saying. He says, when you fall in love with your own true nature, which is love, and its natural qualities, you'll want to return again and again. He says, like a romantic love, when you're in love with your true nature, you have a natural interest, motivation, and devotion. Don't you love that feeling of loving? To loving the garden when you tend the garden? To loving your kitty cat when she's on your lap and you're scratching her neck? I love my little pug with all of his foibles. Somebody in the center, it was Lee, sent me a pug meditation, and it was so cute. It says, the pug is sitting on my lap, and he's a heavy thing. My lap's going to sleep. Then the pug starts to snore, and it becomes a snoring meditation. And then you smell that strange smell, it's pug smell. All pug meditation, but you know, I love every bit of that little gnarly pug of mine. He says, then the next step is no longer seeking in the spiritual marketplace, but rather making a commitment. We're no longer looking for love out there, but we're making a commitment to let the love flower within ourselves. This isn't the end, to be the love. He says, the love that you've been seeking is already who you are. So you're already living together. You're married to love. Isn't that fantabulous? He says, you've been worried that there was going to be a funeral for your ego, but instead it's a wedding celebration. Let your ego marry your soul. Let your ego be married to love. You know, when Rumi made his transition, his disciples were grieving and grieving, and he says, have I taught you nothing? Where would I go? He said, this isn't my death. This is my wedding day. My wedding day. I told that to a young lady who was dying at the center, and I'm holding her hand. I said, what if you were to think of today as your wedding day? And she loved that idea. So he's saying the same thing. Get married to love. And the very last paragraph of the book said, here's how you do it. He says, kindness and awareness, they become the laws of your life. Simply shift and you will know. Choose any time of day to step off the train of thoughts and step into this awake awareness that's just waiting for you. He says, do what you love. This young couple are here and they hate their corporate jobs and they say, what should we do? And I said, find something you love and then do that. I'm doing what I love. He says, walk in nature, dance, play with animals, be in the water. That's for you, Gigi. He says, connect with friends, do something silly, laugh out loud, sing in the shower, go to the museum or a concert. I love wearing my mask and going to the museum, and my husband and I will walk around the room and we'll say, what's your favorite painting? And then we'll make a game out of it. I know we're not supposed to talk in the museum, but you have to have fun when you go to a dry old museum. He says this, shift into awake awareness and accept what is happening and just let it be what it is. He says, don't react to reactivity. Ooh, don't react to reactivity. Don't judge judgment. Just allow everything to move through. So when judgment comes, there's a judging thought. And then once it's acknowledged and seen, then it can be allowed. I did this meditation workshop, and there was a Qigong master there, and she spoke about in Qigong, which is working with the Qi, this life force. She says, it's about allowing everything. And in that allowing, then we can find our way to navigate, to allow what is. So his very last words are, give someone a compliment. This is the work of love. Make a gratitude list and count your blessings. When I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep, and you'll find your counting your blessing. Ask for a hug and receive it. You know what? I'm not going to tell who did it, but two people in this sanctuary hugged. They did a virtual hug. They put their face with their mask the other way, and they did a hug because it feels so good. The lady, when I gave her the $1,000, she came and threw her arms and I, whatever, you push her away. No. Ask for a hug and receive it. Ask someone else if they want a hug and then give it to them. Wear bright colors sometimes, or maybe most times. Walk around with an inner smile, even behind your mask. Be kind to the inner voices and say to them, I hear you, sweetheart, and it's okay. You know, when we have these voices within, don't shame them, don't treat them away. Listen to them. They want to be heard. When I realized that I had exiled my own little inner boy, and after the heart attack, he came up in his vulnerability, and I was told to ask him what he wants, and he just wanted me to hold him. So could we know that there's a little boy and a little girl in all of us, I don't care what age you are, and when they come up, if you don't have Jean or Anne-Marie to hug you, well, then you get to hug yourself. You know, we get to be there for each other. My dogs, you know, she has Pepper to hug her now. My little dog, baby Speck, when I had the heart attack, I landed on her, and I felt being embraced by this dog. I thought, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out being held by my pup. So, be kind to those inner voices and say, I hear you, sweetheart, and send heartfelt good wishes to someone you know, and then say a prayer for a stranger who seems down and out. Receive the support of the universe and pause before sending important emails. Huh. Yeah. Don't you hate it when you get that Dear John email or letter that's very blaming of you and it's projected onto you and you weren't there when I needed, you know, and I've had those in my lifetime. And it hurts because we are all doing the very best we can. And I find myself, when I do receive one of those, I thank you for sharing. I'm sorry you're hurting. I realize this is a cry for love. And I do the best I can to see them in a different light. It's not about fixing the world, but it's about seeing it. As Ernest Holmes says, it's the perception of wholeness that's all healing. So when this feeling of discord and dis-ease arises, could we cultivate this perception of wholeness? And let that be our holding place, to be held in this wholeness. Yeah. So the last thing, I have a poem for you from Mark Nebo, and I'm going to use that to lead our final closing meditation. This is a book called The Way Under the Way, and it's the ponderings of a jubilant and a beholden soul who, in facing life's challenges, found a way to be held by love. You know, the work of love is that love is holding us all the time, and we don't realize it. We're being held by this love during this time. If you just stop long enough, you can feel it. It's there. It never went anywhere. We can confuse it with a human love, thinking, I need Michael to hold me. But if I just stop long enough, I can feel I'm really held by the love of God, by the grace of God, by the love of this planet. When I had the heart attack and I was really having almost survival remorse because I didn't think I would, and I did, and I was all alone, and I called a friend, and I said, I don't know what to do. I'm grieving my own death that it didn't happen. And she gave me the best advice. She says, go lie on the earth completely and feel yourself being held and supported and loved by the Divine Mother. It did more for me just to lie on the earth and to look at nature all around me. And every flower, I mean, it was like I was, every bird that sang was singing for me. Every cloud in the sky was showing its beauty. The miracle that we're here still, we have Glorigi here. She's talking, she's driving, a miracle. And she has painted toenails, you know? So here's this poem. I called it The Work of Love, but he called Accepting What Is. And it's very beautiful. So let yourself feel into these poetic words. He says, yes, it is true, I confess. I have thought great thoughts, and I have sung great songs. And all of it, a rehearsal for the simple majesty of being held by love. The dream is awakened when thinking the simple thought, I love you. And life begins when I can say those words, I love you. And joy moves like blood when remembering others with love. My efforts now turn from trying to outrun suffering. My efforts now turn to accepting love wherever love is. Stripped of causes and plans and things to strive for, I have discovered everything that I could need or ask for is right here, in its own flawed abundance. We cannot eliminate hunger, but we can learn to feed each other. We cannot eliminate loneliness, but we can hold each other. We cannot eliminate pain, but we can live a life of compassion for that pain. Ultimately, we are small living things awakening in the stream of life. Like human fish, we're asked to experience meaning in the life that moves through the gills of our heart. I'll read that again. Like human fish, we're asked to experience meaning, and that's the soul, in the life that moves through the gills of our heart. There is nothing to do. There is nowhere to go. And accepting this, we can do everything and we can go anywhere. And when we go nowhere, then we are now here. So with those beautiful words of Mark Nepo, that holding space, that open heart, that breathing heart, we rest in that that abiding love. And as we breathe in and we breathe out, we realize that love is breathing. And now we stabilize that love by affirming, I am love. And when I am loving, I am being godlike, because God is love. And as Khalil Gibran says, your work should be your devotion. It should be your worship. And so we are making a commitment to marry love right now. And our work is love. We are wedded to love. Our ego is in service to love. So we're stabilizing that vibrational field that Einstein wrote about by not keeping this love under a bushel, but letting it flow. The simple things like feeding a fish in the pond, smiling at a neighbor, giving someone an embrace when they're sad or lonely, the work of love, small acts done with great love. And as we stabilize this love, then this love finds a way to express itself. It finds a way to unfold and reveal itself with every breath. And so love, the beingness of love, now gets to move into doing. Whatever love wants to do, we say yes. I love that word commitment. I'm probably the most committed human being I know. It comes from the Latin word comitare, which means to circle something, something you deeply care about. So I invite you to commit. Commit to love. And then let love lead the way, as Ernest Holmes would say. Let love lead the way, and the law will make the way possible. He also said, the thing you're looking for, you're looking with. And so if you have been looking for love, realize that it's right there within you. It's love that's looking. And now love, we're finding love. We're finding love in the sweetest, gentlest, smallest of ways. It's not a complicated equation. It's a simple truth. Our true nature is love. The psalm said, all is love and all is law. Two simple things. And he said, if I've taught you anything, it's oneness. So there's only one love, one life, God's life, perfect, our life. And we know that now for ourselves, and we know it for each other, and we know it for the world. If there's anyone that you know might be struggling right now, I see my sister-in-law, my beloved Tia, is going to be having back surgery. She has a herniated disc. I've been invited or asked to put her in our prayer this morning. So anyone you know, my own self with my challenges, don't forget to put yourself in this circle of love. I use that phrase circle of love because that comes from Rumi, who says, when you step out of the circle of time, we know time is an illusion, as Einstein said, then you can step into the circle of love. So I invite you to step into that circle of love where everybody is invited. In oneness, by its very nature, embraces diversity. So all are included in this honeypot of love. All life, all sentient life, and it's all sentient. So honoring the world, honoring ourselves, I invite you to put your hands together, and from the depths of that love, let's join in the heart salutation by saying, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are an aspect of myself.
You are an aspect of myself.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
In this place we are one.
In this place we are one.
And from that felt awareness of this oneness and this beautiful vibratory field of love, that is now resonating through you, open your arms symbolically and let that love radiate out into the world, offering it back to the world. What powerful, what powerful expressions you are. Thank all of you out there for sending in your money. It means a lot.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.